And Smash, well, good morning, and thank you for joining us. It is Morning Drive. We are off and running. Oh, God, it's going to be a crazy 4 hours here on a Tuesday. We are live this morning from Jack Daniel's Barrel House, Bridgestone Arena. Nick Cale, Braden Gall, Derek Mason, the Constable Chase McCabe with you. Predators and the Maple Leafs tonight as Nashville starts up a home stand, and Belmont is a part of the first four this evening. What's up, boys?
How we doing?
What up?
Who's excited about the Belmont game, man? Like, I'm like legit excited about the Belmont game.
I totally am.
I mean, Belmont should be excited. This is
two TV setup today for sure.
They win, they advance. They lose, well, they go back to 12 South.
12 South. There you go.
Yeah. No, I mean, they go back to Belmont.
What I'm saying
The area of the city is Belmont.
I'm saying is the streets. That's where they go back
I think it's actually Belmont Boulevard.
12 South and what's the name of
Belmont.
The Wedgewood. It's right off of 12 South and Wedgewood. Damn it. Okay?
Don't worry.
I ask my buddy where he lives, he goes Belmont, off Belmont Boulevard.
I would say nothing to worry about today.
The street that I drive down and I see the big ass building, but I said it anyway. That building, it's right off of Wedgewood.
Yeah, that's true. That building is beautiful.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
That's the border of the campus right there. And actually,
okay, the border of the campus. That's
yeah,
what it
and
is.
And then the other border is like Belmont.
Belmont Boulevard.
That road, dude, I love driving down Belmont Boulevard. Those houses are just like, they're like 12-person houses. They're huge.
That's a little side street, right?
No, the main one that runs past like PM and all those restaurants that are right there and past the actual Curb Event Center. And it runs, those houses are like, you know, like 13 people live in those houses. Those things are huge. And then it ends up down by, I think, what is it? Martin's Barbecue? Jack's Barbecue? I can't remember which one's
there. There's a Martin's over here.
There's a Martin's down there.
That's a good place to have a rental property.
Those houses,
rental property.
Some of those houses are like, I mean, those are, you know, 1.3. Yeah. I mean, those things are huge.
And a bunch of college students living in them, probably.
You think any of them
watch? Very old.
Any of them watch CNN?
I'm pretty sure they watch. Oh, yeah,
hey,
they're
Pete.
Pretty sure.
Hey, Pete, you watch CNN?
I'm pretty sure a lot of them watch CNN. Kids nowadays, yeah.
Okay. We got a lot of good stuff today. Floyd Reese at 6:30. We'll talk some college basketball with Dalen Cuff from ESPN at 7 o'clock. And, of course, we will ask all these guys if, in fact, they do watch CNN. But Belmont tonight, maybe I'm a little new to this. And maybe I shouldn't be surprised because Belmont, small school Christian program. But are you surprised that it seems like everybody – whether you're a Vol fan, a Vandy fan, just living in the Middle Tennessee area, kind of gets behind a team like Belmont? Because coming from Philadelphia, like Temple, who Belmont plays tonight, Temple fans will never root for Villanova fans in the tournament vice versa. But yet here, it's completely different. At least that's what it seems like.
Yeah, I don't – first of all, Temple and Villanova are far closer in terms of their – I would guess even just like their recruiting budgets, right? Like their level of success has been far closer. The Big Five in Philly, right? You can speak to the Big Five. I don't know if I can do it. What, Drexel, LaSalle?
St. Joe's.
Yep. And even St. Joe's is on sort of the top tier, right? Like St. Joe's is up there with Villanova and Temple. And so I think that's part of it. I think Tennessee fans and Vandy fans would never root for each other. I'm probably pretty unique in that I'm an alumni of an SEC school that sort of roots for Vanderbilt as a hometown guy, which is probably very unusual. I'm probably in the very small minority on that. I don't until they're playing my alma mater, and then I root for my alma mater. But like I like seeing the hometown team do well. And so, but Belmont's such a lower tier. I think that maybe is the big difference. I think everybody's sort of – I remember when they played Duke, it was like, 2005 or something, 2006, 2007, and they were a 15 seed and almost beat Duke. And I remember being at a sports bar in, like, Maryland Farms, and, like, everybody, people wearing Florida gear, people wearing Tennessee gear, people wearing every other gear, and they were all cheering for Belmont, mostly because everybody hates Duke.
Yeah. Well, and I think people love seeing the underdog, but there's so much respect for Rick Byrd. So
right.
I think that has a lot to do with it, that just what he's built over there.
Yeah, when those smaller schools get in, typically – everyone, because one is because it's a city. I say it's a city school, but it's not.
Right.
But it is, meaning it's within the city limits, and people cheer for a team like that. You know, it's not the Vandy or you know the UT. It's just a smaller school that is coached by a really good coach. and
been around a long time.
And they just seem to do things the right way. Yeah. And people want to see them succeed. Now, do people want to see them, you know, get to the Final Four? I don't know.
People here probably would love
to see
them. They're on opposite ends of the bracket from Tennessee.
But a lot of people actually believe Belmont can not only will win tonight, but could actually win two games in this tournament.
Yeah, Maryland feels like the weakest sixth seed of that group. So if they can get past Temple, I like them to beat Maryland as well. And because here's the bottom line. We've seen a team in one of those play-in games win more than one game almost every year. Tennessee did it one year when they beat Iowa. They went on a run. I mean, it happens all the time. Almost every year you see a team do that. So it wouldn't be sort of a new thing or a new trend if Belmont were to knock off Maryland in the next round should they get past Temple. I think, you know, talking to Coach yesterday, you can hear it in his voice, like how much joy he's getting out of this for his players, right? Like for his seniors and the job that they've done. And I think that's one of those unique things to college sports that doesn't exist in the pro ranks. It's probably one of the reasons why I love college athletics. I will take college basketball over the NBA. I know, Derek, you disagree. Mm-hmm. I would watch college basketball every time. I would probably watch college football over pro football every time. It's because of things like Belmont and two seniors that, you know, they're probably not going to win a national title, let's be honest, right? But, like, they get to go to do this, right, tonight. They get to go play this game, and that's what, you know, you don't ever see that in the professional ranks. It's just a unique thing to college athletics.
You know, we do
title of life, man.
Title of life?
Yeah.
You're going very Butch Jonesy over there. I'm not sure.
Butch Jonesy.
You want to do that.
I don't know. Rick Bird likes that.
You're acting sort of Butch Jonesy over there. I think there's penicillin shots for those. You can go to the pharmacy and get that taken care of.
I was just looking at the bracket. You know, it's funny you talk about the Belmont actually having a chance, if they win tonight against Temple, to beat Maryland as a sixth seed. Could you imagine if that played out, we would, in all likelihood, barring a crazy upset of Yale over LSU, we would have Belmont against SEC power LSU, who many people think is reeling and could very well be an early exit.
And a national coach, if he's back, Will Wade, which I doubt he would be.
Think about that storyline.
But here's the question. I can't figure out LSU at all. Sometimes I look at my bracket and I'm like, no, they're probably going to play Duke in the Elite Eight because they're too talented. And then you look at – but then you're like, but they were – terrible, and they crumbled against Florida, and they don't have their coach, and I don't know what to make. Like, I don't know what to make of LSU. I could see them doing anything from losing to Yale or getting all the way to beating Duke. I mean, they've got athletes to compete with Duke.
Haven't they been playing with fire all year, though? Even before Will Wade was suspended, I mean, there were some games that you kind of look at going.
But they are still
a
young
still
team.
Legit.
Yeah, they're still a young team, and their best player is a freshman. He's what 19 years old. And it, they get in these ruts where it just seems as if they can look like the best team in the country and they can look like the worst team in the country.
Yeah.
You know, lapses in defense, just like Duke. I mean, and maybe in Kentucky's the same way. And maybe it has to do with, you know, playing with freshmen.
All those young guys.
Yeah, and you know, they can go on a spurt for, you know, the first half or a half of the first half, and then all of a sudden it looks as if, you know, they don't know what they're doing. It's like everybody's just out there, you know, doing their own thing.
Well, and Waters is supposed to be their best player, and he's a veteran, but he's had a couple of, you know, his last couple of games, he wasn't that great against Florida at all.
I think the best is Reed, man. I call him a black version of Bill Laimbeer, man.
He is the lottery pick on the team.
He will step out and knock down a three-pointer, but then get in the middle and kind of do his work, even though Bill didn't do a lot of work in the middle. He did some. But he can step out and shoot that three-pointer.
He hit two huge ones in the final minute and a half against Florida. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, yeah. He hit the one with like 30 seconds left to tie the game or put him ahead, something like that.
Push comes to shove. Who would you rather have, Naz Reid or Reed Travis?
I might go
Reed. Oh, man.
Right now, in the tournament?
Because I know you like them both.
I say Reed Travis. I think Reed Travis, he has a little bit more dog in him. Naz Reid still got the baby fat on him. And,
NBA, you know. I want Naz Reid long term.
Yeah.
Right now, today in the tournament,
Reed
I want
Travis.
Reed Travis.
Yeah.
And did you just ask that question because they're both named Reed?
Yeah.
No, I just know that Mason likes them both.
Yeah.
Okay.
Both of them. I think both of them are good players.
I'm telling you, I liked Reed Travis, like just as a player throughout the course of the year. And then I stood next to the guy and I was like, Holy moly.
Total beast.
You're a monster.
The other quick question, maybe we could do this as a poll question and get the results throughout the show, but yesterday I texted my buddies in my fantasy football league back home, and I said, do you guys want to do a bracket pool this year? And the one buddy responded immediately. He says, no, and I don't want to see who you pick. Don't screenshot me your bracket. I don't care. I was like, well, okay.
So he knows you well.
Screenshot it and send it.
He knows you well.
That is correct. And I was wondering, what do people care less about? I think we should definitely do this as the poll question this morning. Do you care less about someone's bracket or someone else's fantasy football team?
Yes.
Or preseason or someone's preseason
prediction. No. I asked you this question last year.
And where did this come from?
I asked you this question last year, and I completely agree with you. I think these are the two things in sports that people cannot control themselves to try to tell you about. Mm-hmm. And then you could not care less about.
Yeah.
Because everybody walks up and they're like, dude, I got Eddie George in the fourth round. And people are like, I don't care. Somebody comes up and goes, man, I picked Oregon right. I got Oregon in the first round on Thursday night. You see that big shot that they made? They beat Wisconsin in the first round. I had Oregon in my bracket. People are like, I don't care.
You've never seen Oregon play. Other than to pick them, and now you want to watch them. And it's all of a sudden, mm-hmm. Now it's like you watched them the whole year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As soon as you pick that 12 seed, you're like, those are my boys, New Mexico State. What's up?
I watched them the whole year, man. That kid, man, they get that point guard. Oh, he's the lottery pick. No, he's not, man.
I think it is a great – I think it's a great poll question. What do you care less about?
Yeah.
Other people's fantasy teams or other people's brackets?
But you gotta love it, man, because people get so excited about their brackets. It's as if
it's true.
They are just like this is the best thing in the world. Like,
well, it's a great time of the year.
If their team advance, oh my goodness. But if they lose, they come into work next morning.
Devastated.
Yeah, get away from them.
you're like Iowa lost in the first round. You're like, why are you so upset about Iowa losing?
Like,
you never
you
watched
there?
A game in your life.
But you know what it is? Like, I don't get upset about my bracket going to smithereens in the first 2 days. Because it's such a crapshoot. There's so many teams, and it's a quick, I'll call it an investment. Fantasy football is a 4-month ordeal.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But no, I don't want my team to lose. If I pick, you know, Duke or North Carolina or one of those teams, I don't want them to get put out in the first 2 rounds. Because it just throws everything off for everybody.
You want to go even deeper into the psychology of picking a bracket? Because I'm kind of with you, Nick. I won one time in like 20 years of filling out a bracket. Mm-hmm. I won in like 2004 because I picked Luke Schencher and Georgia Tech to lose to UConn and Emeka Okafor. I got it right. I was poor. I was in college. I put $5 down and I made $250, and now I'm cashed in for the rest of my life. I don't care if I ever win again. So I don't really care about the bracket. But here's my psychology of it all. I'm picking Tennessee to lose way earlier than they're supposed to because I'm like, all right, well, if they lose to Villanova, then I get it right. But if they beat Villanova and they move on,
it's a bonus.
It's all gravy there too. So like my psychology of it is I'm not going to pick them to win anything because I'm the opposite of you. Like you've got Sparty winning the whole thing.
Oh, I got Sparty winning the whole
thing.
And I will be devastated if they don't win.
Right.
I just love my university, man. Love my university.
But then your bracket's busted
and you're upset.
So it's a double whammy.
I'm preparing myself for the disappointment.
So what I'm doing is I'm hedging.
Oh.
I'm hedging. I'm going to pick them to lose to Cincinnati.
Oh, man.
Because that's the psychology. Like the same thing with fantasy sports. Like I won't pick any Mets on my team. As a Mets fan, I don't want to pick any Mets because as soon as I do, they're all going to get hurt.
See, you're that guy that will not pick your team, but in the background, you're crossing your fingers, I hope they make it. But then when they lose, you're like, I didn't pick them to go anyway.
But, right, exactly. Well, no, it's a consolation.
Uh-huh.
The consolation is, oh, my bracket was right.
Exactly.
See, I used to pick Phillies all the time in fantasy baseball. I would take Ryan Howard and Chase Utley, all the people I hated. I would take all of them because I'm like, you know what? If they're going to be good, I might as well get something out of the deal because they're going to break my heart as a Mets fan.
It's a bold strategy.
I might as well
there,
get something out of it.
I'll put him on my fantasy team. Maybe I'll make some money out of the deal.
Yeah.
All right, here's the
stupid,
phone.
Stupid Chase Utley.
Not Chase McCabe.
I hate Chase Utley so much.
Here is the phone number to get in, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, and you'll want to be involved in the show today on the phones because the best caller of today's program is going to get a pair of tickets to see the Predators take on the Maple Leafs tonight at Bridgestone Arena.
What?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So
what?
If you want those tickets.
That's a 12 to 6 curveball at 6:15 in the morning.
And if you want to get in on the show, but here's the deal. If you got to be able to get the tickets tonight. You got to be able to go. The game's tonight.
Is it?
It is tonight.
When?
It's a heck of a game, man.
Where at? Where is it at?
It's at Bridgestone, baby.
What? Right, are you serious? Are.
Yep.
And it's how much?
It's complimentary.
Oh, free.
There you go.
Oh, snap. Yes.
And it's tonight?
Tonight.
Yeah, rumor has it.
You get to watch.
Hey, who playing tonight?
You get to watch Callie Yonkruk with Colton Sissons and Craig Smith.
Who's
the new best line in Predators history.
I think it's Toronto and some other. What's the other team called?
Gosh.
The Sabercats.
Hey, if y'all listen to hey, call us. Call in and tell us who's playing tonight because we don't know who's playing tonight.
The Nashville Smilodons.
Smilodons.
All right, 615-737-1025. We'll come back. We'll continue some hoops. Ed Reed, Floyd Reese, you name him. He'll join us.
That was Floyd Reed.
Floyd Reed. I got Nas Reed on the brain.
Not
Reed Travis.
That was that kid's name in my third grade English class. Man.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
We'll step aside, we'll regroup, and we'll come back and get this party started here on a Tuesday on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're live this morning inside of Jack Daniel's Barrel House, Bridgestone Arena. Nick Braden, D-Mace, and the Constable. Poll question going up. Who do you care less about, or what do you care less about? Someone else's March Madness bracket or their fantasy team? And I got to think the fantasy team is going to win out big time
that
with
would be
the results.
Yeah, that was my vote.
I couldn't care less about somebody picking, you know, I don't know who, Conley,
but like
receiver
to,
in the 15th round.
To Braden's point, he's like, you know, if you pick Duke and you're like, okay, cool, that's, you know, whatever. But if somebody says
like, yeah, who you got winning it all.
And right. But like if somebody says they've got player X in a fantasy league, well, then like there's like 5,000 follow-up questions. Well,
right.
Is it a 12-team league or is it a 10-team? Is it PPR? Two quarterbacks? It's like, what?
How many keepers are there?
Yeah, it's like I don't want to hear about all that.
Agreed. Yeah. Did you guys see the big story of the day yesterday was the fact that there was the leaking – premature leaking.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yes,
whoa.
Premature leakage of the ESPN Women's March Madness bracket.
Oh, man.
To the point where ESPN had to go live and do their show sooner than anticipated.
That is just, I mean, you know things like that could possibly happen, but you try to take all measures so it won't happen because you don't want to spoil these women's, you know, the enjoyment and the surprise that they get, the excitement that they get. You get that true reaction when they see on television, okay, we've made it or we did make it or we are number one seed or we're number two seed. When they're filming them, you get a true reaction from them.
Yep.
And then when it's leaked, they still got to show the teams, and now they got to – it's this fabrication of
like,
an excitement. Yeah, so whoever did that, man, shame on you.
It was an accident. So
yeah, but shame on them. I mean, come on.
Well, in the college football, the way the functionality of it all works with the college football playoff show, which is even more ironic because none of the rankings actually matter in college football, but they keep them embargoed. So the only people that know are like the guys that are doing the Chiron, which is the graphics machine for television. Those are like the only three humans that have the rankings before like Reese Davis and Herb Street and all those guys get the rankings and they put them out. The guys know about the bracket on the two shows on Sunday night, but they only get it, I think, you know, like 30, 45 minutes or whatever. This was leaked like 7 hours. Mm. I don't know why you couldn't cut down on the risk by giving them the bracket far later in the day. Now, I think a lot of people are going to say, oh, you know, it's women's basketball. What's the big deal? I'm with you, dude. Like, these girls have – these athletes have one chance to watch their name come up a year and celebrate – and you've taken that one thing that makes the moment special and just ruined it all. Now, don't get me wrong. There probably was like a cool moment where they're all texting each other going, hey, we're a 3 seed. All
they
right.
still were excited.
Yeah, I mean, but it's not the same. It's just not the same. You can't put the hay back in the barn on that
one. They should do it old school, man. You know, whoever, you know, spits it into the computer, let it spit back out, take that sheet, put it in the suitcase.
Take that sheet, put it in the suitcase.
Take the sheet, put it in the briefcase, take some handcuffs, wrap it around your wrist, lock that thing, and walk around with it on your wrist. And erase it from the computer. Then you know only one person has it.
Take it offline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then you get La La Land.
Because here's the deal.
Yeah, you got a point.
Oh, good morning, Buck.
Here's the deal. Once it's on the – and this is an important lesson for all kids. If you put anything into your phone – and send it to someone or put it on the internet, it is there permanently.
Oh, yeah.
It's there, whether it's a text message or a phone call or a Snapchat or whatever. There is a footprint of it somewhere, and somebody can find it.
And some smart person can find it and leak it, as they did this time.
Was it at Dan Virk that leaked it?
Could be. Okay. Now,
oh, that's what got him fired.
No, I know. Didn't the men's get leaked not long ago?
Huh?
The men's bracket got leaked not long ago.
I can't remember ever.
Somebody,
a time.
Some bracket got leaked.
Can we come up with a better word?
Leaked.
No.
I mean, leaked,
there's nothing wrong with this.
Come on, you get your. See, that's you, Chase. It's nobody else.
No, it's just there's some words that you hear them and you don't like them and leaked.
Right.
Trigger words.
It's not as bad as moist.
Moist. Hey,
your bladder issues aren't our problem.
Exactly.
Moist is worse. We could, you know, moist is moisture, moistly, moisten.
Exactly.
Okay, stop.
I mean, women all across the city hate that word.
Okay, let's go back to.
No, my wife hates that word.
Let's go back to leak. Okay.
The Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, absolutely. The Nashville Predators play tonight.
Are y'all incapable of having a conversation about language?
Listen, you know we all are like 5 years old, okay? So you can't go there.
That's just you're awesome.
Hey, I'm an adolescent. Hey, I'm 13.
I'm 8.
Okay. Yeah. He's 8.
And I'm 12. Get it right.
As Tawana Iverson once said, don't go there with me. I ain't for no games.
We talking about?
Right? Talking about practice. 615-737-1025 is the number. We will get some calls going this hour, but up next, we got to get to Floyd Reese. We'll talk all things Tennessee Titans with him. And then also, coming up in about 20 minutes, if you're a Titans fan, you should be feeling very, very good. Floyd Reese joins us next here on Morning Drive. All right, welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live this morning from Barrel House, Bridgestone Arena, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Braden, D. Mace, and the Constable Chase McCabe as we welcome in Floyd Reese, former Titans general manager, of course, co-host of Jared and the GM. You can catch him weekdays from 2 to 6 here on The Game. Floyd, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys this morning?
Doing well. John Robinson so far has had a really strong offseason, especially in free agency. I saw the numbers come out yesterday. They have just about $31 million in cap space left. Obviously, you have to account for $5 or $6 million for the draft picks. But at this point, what is John Robinson doing as far as looking at the secondary market of free agents? Or is he maybe completely done?
Well, I doubt that he's completely done. Now, you know, how extensive they get into it will be up to them. But there's just too many guys out there, even though the top-line guys are probably pretty much gone. There are still guys that you can bring in to supplement and, you know, looking for a guard, looking for a backup lineman, looking for some kind of, you know, depth on your roster. And I think right now they're probably looking at things like that.
Floyd, I mean, we've talked about, you know, the whole free agency period and what the Titans will do for the last, I don't know, month, and I don't think there's anything else we can, you know, ask you that you hadn't already answered either with us or on your show. I'm going to take another angle. Other teams within the conference, how do you think teams like Indianapolis, teams that are at the top, Indianapolis and Jacksonville, well, not Jacksonville, but Houston. We know Houston hadn't done anything, and frankly, Indy hasn't done anything. Do you look at those teams and start to wonder, are they – going to make moves in free agency? And if they do, if you were a GM, knowing what you know, looking at Indy and Houston, what angle, what area on their team would you decide to put your resources?
You know, if it's me, I'm going to do everything I can to help Luck out. Not that he needs a great deal of luck, especially when he's playing the Titans. But I think you look to, you know, find an extra receiver here or there, somebody that could come in and help. It's always interesting in free agency because, you know, there are times where your needs, the things you're really looking for, you want to supplement, maybe aren't there. Or they're franchised, or they're, you know, you just can't get somebody else who wants more than you do, and they're willing to pay more draft choices, more money, more whatever it is. And consequently, I think you fall out of contention for guys like that, even though you would like to have them. And it appears to me that Indy is doing a very good job of putting the thing together. I think they're being very resourceful. You know, they did just an outstanding job last year in the draft. And I think, consequently, they have a lot of confidence they could maybe find what they want in the draft. But I have no doubt they'll continue to supplement, kind of like we will. You know, I saw a thing today that was talking about the number of free agents that sign 4- and 5-year contracts that don't make it to the third year. And the number was around 65%. So you look at that and you say, well, you know, all these deals really look good today. You know, you look at them and you think, okay, that really solved a problem. Let's move on. And then you get into camp, and all of a sudden you're going, you know what? That solution wasn't quite as good as we thought it was. And so you're kind of right back where you were. It's really, really difficult in free agency to get a guy and have him come in and be exactly what you want. They may be close. And they may be, you know, maybe far, but, you know, you bring them in with all the good intentions in the world, and yet when they start practicing and you see them with the other players and in the locker room, it's practice habits, et cetera, all of a sudden you kind of back up and go, geez, you know, he's not quite exactly what we expected.
Hey, Floyd, Baltimore hit a home run, I just hate to tell you, with myself. I just had to throw that out there, Floyd. I'm messing with you this early.
I wish I could debate that with you, but you're exactly right.
And I had a Jayon Brown joke ready to go about how Andrew Luck, you know, can't beat Jayon Brown. Jayon Brown's the only one. No. All right, Floyd. So what exactly? First of all, I think John Robinson has shown. Unlike most GMs currently in any sport, I think John Robinson has shown an ability to cut bait and admit a decision that is wrong when he sees it quickly, whether it's Kevin Dodd or Josh Klein. You're going to make mistakes as a GM. It's not something you can do 100%. You're going to make mistakes. So how important is it in the locker room with your staff, with your scouting department, to admit a mistake, move on from a guy? How does that help build trust and culture with the current people that you still do have around you?
You know, I think it's most important in the locker room because the players know. You know, you can say what you want and the press can cover it the way they want and the radio shows can talk about it the way they want. The people that know are in the locker room and they go out, they deal with them in the locker room. They go out and practice every day and they see them in practice and they know the guys. I remember even after draft classes, you would bring a draft class in and if there was somebody in that class that was really, really good or really, really bad, you would know about it pretty quickly, you know, because somebody would walk by and they would say, man, oh, man, that curse is a freak, you know, or man, oh, man, that Dodd is not quite what we expected. So they know, and I think that the willingness to show that you're going to admit your mistakes, they are right, he's not quite what we expected, and we're willing to cut bait, I think gives them confidence, not only in the fact that you're going to make the decisions you need to make for the team, but I think it also gives them a little bit of confidence. You know, they're saying, hey, they recognize that guy right now as not being good enough, and he is no longer here, but I am. Maybe I'm good enough. You know, maybe I'm better than I think I was.
Floyd Reese is joining us, as he does every Tuesday here on Morning Drive. Floyd, I know you've had two shows in the books since the news broke about Ryan Tannehill, but just inform this audience as to your reaction to that decision, the signing, and what you think this means moving forward for Ryan Tannehill and Marcus Mariota.
Yeah, I think it was a good decision. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt, but at least history has shown us that we're going to need somebody that is – is an improved backup for a couple of games a year. You know, I think earlier in the process, you could bring a guy in and understand that he might not be exactly what you want, but probably wasn't going to make the difference in the season. You know, probably wasn't going to be that guy that could win the 10th game or maybe, you know, get you to 8-8. I think they're at a point now where they're looking for that guy to win the 10th game, and they need somebody of that caliber. You know, and Tannehill has started, has been there, has won games. Is he, you know, a starter? I mean, I think he's kind of relegated that position to where the league looks at him and says, no, he's not really a starter. Is he a really, really good backup? I think that's what we're hoping for. And, you know, God forbid, but if he has to go in and play three games, four games, or whatever, he's like Neil O'Donnell did for us way back when. You know, if he has to play four games, he can go 3-1. And if you can go 3-1, that may be enough to get you over the hump.
Now, Floyd, we know free agency and how it has played out over the years. This thing started way back when Reggie White decided to test the market and really challenge the NFL, you know, in regards to players being able to move and not being stuck with one team for the, you know, duration of their NFL career and getting locked into a contract. Since then, since Reggie White, you know, did what he did, and it hasn't, because of him, it has improved what football is today, I believe.
Right.
As a GM, when you first became a GM, did you ever think that free agency would get to this point where it is now? I'm not even talking about the money. I'm just talking about guys, the movements, you know, and everything else that encompasses free agency, because when it started, I don't think, you know, people understood what that meant when Reggie White stepped out amongst everyone and decided, I want to test the market. I want to be my own corporation and be able to, you know, go out and pick and choose whatever team I want to go to.
Yeah, it's really been an interesting process, because if you look back at it, I think, you know, players wanted to be able – when I first got in the league, you drafted a guy, and if he was a good player like you, you know, you'd still be playing. You'd still be you and Eddie, and some way, somehow, we'd find a way to keep you on the roster. Well, you know, free agency came and it changed things. I think it changed things from the standpoint that it gave the players the movement they want. The money we know is still there. The allure of free agency and of you being able to go out and buy a championship team like you could maybe do in basketball or baseball, I think we've found is not true. You know, that is not the case. And we've seen three or four or five examples that, you know, probably most recently Washington, when they went out on their spree and spent, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to bring all these free agents in. And all of a sudden you realize that, yeah, these guys are good players, but they're all different. And they're all, you know, lead dogs. And so when you get into the locker room, it's not quite the same as a locker room, you know, where you have the guys that have struggled, that have been free agents that work their way up. So I think there's been a lot of pluses to it. I understand why it's there, and I think it should be there. And yet, you know, I always felt it was one of those things that you supplement. You help your draft class. You help the quality of your team. But very, very seldom can you go out and buy a championship team.
Now, obviously, Floyd, I'd like your thoughts then on what John Robinson has done this offseason, because in theory he spent $60 million on Malcolm Butler, $80 million on Malcolm Butler and Deion Lewis last year, $130 million this year on Vaccaro and Saffold and Humphreys and Wake. It feels systematic in his approach. It doesn't feel like he's trying to buy a championship, but he is spending a bunch of money. Do you consider what the Titans have done supplementing, or do you think what the Titans have done is sort of falling more into that Redskins and Eagles category of just spending? Because it feels like he's systematically approaching the roster. What category do you put what John Robinson has done into?
You know, I think, again, being that our team is not quite, you know, where you want it to be. Remember 5 years ago, 4 years ago, we went through and you would say there were so many holes on this roster that you could go out and get any free agent, draft anybody, and they come in and be a starter. Why? Because you didn't have anybody. Well, now I think you can look at this team and you can say, you know, do we need a left tackle? No. Do we need a running back? No. Do we need a – and consequently, it eliminates a lot of the things you have to look for. I thought they were fortunate in that, you know, they really wanted a slot receiver. They went out and got one of the better ones in the league. They needed a left guard, and they went out and got one of the better ones, you know, in free agency. I think when you look at it that way, I think they have done a great job. Now, they've still got a guard position they've got to do something with. But I think what he has done to supplement, I'll use that word, supplement, you know, the team that was already here, looks like it's got a chance to really, really be effective.
Floyd, great stuff as always. We appreciate the time. We'll be listening today at 2.
Thanks, guys.
You got it. Floyd Reese
joining
us. Hey,
what you owe, Floyd?
he's right. I don't see the Titans in this scenario trying to buy a team. I think they're systematically trying to put together a team that they're trying to get guys that can seamlessly, you know, get in with the other guys. They don't want – that whole Antonio Brown thing, they were never really a player because – even though he is a great talent, he goes against everything that they are as a team.
Yeah.
And if you go get Antonio Brown, you go get Le'Veon Bell, you go get some – it's almost as if we don't care about the culture. We're just trying to buy a team and win now.
And they've worked so hard to build that.
Exactly.
I mean,
absolutely.
We looked at the roster yesterday. There are 8 players on this team that were here when John Robinson got here. Mm-hmm. There's only 8 names, and most of them are all the biggest cornerstone names, and he's built around them. It's weird. He spent $200 million in free agency the last 2 years, but it doesn't feel like he's buying a championship at all. It feels like it's supplementing and systematically approaching roster weaknesses. I think it's just sort of a state of the game, right? Like the price of doing business has gone up across the board.
Yeah.
The cap has gone up. Everybody's spending money. So – I don't know. You gotta spend it. Does this make sense? Like, it feels like they're only supplementing. It doesn't feel like they're trying to buy a championship, but they're spending a boatload of money. So
it's the sticker shock thing,
right? Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, because you gotta spend the money now. The NFL and the new collective bargaining states that you gotta spend X amount of dollars every year. Well, before then, it wasn't that way. And what teams were doing, teams were withholding money. They were trying to stockpile it for the next year so they could then get that big free agent. Well, now you can't do it because you got to spend a certain amount. I think it's like 80 or 90% of your cap.
Well, no, you
have
can roll,
to spend it.
You can
but
roll
then the rest of it, you got to roll. But you have to spend the money. You can't just hold on to it and say, you know what, I'm going to hold on to it for the next 2 or 3 years so I can get Andrew Luck and offer him the biggest contract in 2022.
And if you're a Titans fan, you're 9-7, you're close to being a really, really good team. Try. go try to be even better. Spend some money, and I think that's what John Robinson's done.
Coming up next, this website's not my favorite, but I think this time the eye test meets the stats, and Tennessee Titans fans should be very happy. We'll delve into that on the other side on Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's 6:48 as we welcome you back into Morning Drive here on this Tuesday. We're live this morning from Barrel House, Bridgestone Arena. Nick Braden, D. Mason, the Constable. So a couple of weeks ago, go ahead.
I want to clarify something because when I said teams must spend X amount of dollars,
This is highly educational,
yeah,
right here.
Yeah, and this is what you need to understand about your teams moving forward, and even the Titans. Now the NFL has stated under the new collective bargaining that all 32 teams, they are required to spend 89% of their cap. Now, here's the caveat. It's called the 89% rule. But here's the caveat. They don't have to spend 89% every year. But after 4 years, whatever they spent, it must average out to 89% of their cap. So if the Titans – that's why you look at Indianapolis, and maybe they're not spending a lot of money. But next year, then they got to spend basically all of it. You look at the Tennessee Titans, they're being judicial about what they do. They're trying to average this thing out. Like, they're not going to spend a lot of money, but they're going to spend some money. But they know that after X amount of years, when the NFL comes in and look, you must have spent 89% of your cap over a four-year period. So when you look at the Titans and you look at them, you know, and you say, well, they're not spending any money, or they're spending all of this money. Well, they're probably spending it for a reason, because they know they got to get to that 89% sooner or later.
I think being a capologist would be super fun, but that's because I'm like a math nerd, analytics guy.
You would like that, huh?
Nick said he wanted to be the guy that fires
works.
Everybody.
Yeah, and that's, of course. That's
Daquan Jones, you're out.
Hey, Mikey. The way it all works is just fascinating, because look, we got dead money, we got cap money, we got roster bonuses, we got bonus money, we got guaranteed money, we got signing bonuses, we got, you look at Roger Saffold and Adam Humphrey's contract, they're not making a ton of money this year, right? They're making like $6 million each. Well, that goes up to like 12 next year for both of them. Like, you can do this stuff however you want. Like, it's a blank canvas of a puzzle piece, right? Mm-hmm. You've got the 89% rule, you've got this cap, you've got 53 guys. I mean, you've got the whole thing. It's just a giant math puzzle on trying to create value for your team. I just find it to be fascinating and interesting. I'd like to sit down on a meeting with a capologist. Forget the GM, forget the head coach. That stuff's interesting too, but just to sit with the two guys or men and women that are sitting there going, all right, if we do this deal like this, and we put this amount of dead money here and this much cap salary here and this much signing bonus, we can then roll this contract into this year, and then that becomes this, and then we cut him and we make this money here. I just think that would be a fascinating view into how NFL teams work, because it's like MIT level of arithmetic at this point.
Sometimes in life you see stats and you know they're a little bit flawed. Like, we look at Ryan Tannehill's career numbers and you compare him to Marcus, but the reality is Tannehill is behind Marcus Mariota. Now, a couple of weeks ago on this show, I wanted to put Pro Football Focus to rest and just finish that site once and for all. But every now and then I feel like they do get it right. So they put out a tweet yesterday about who has won the first week of free agency. And they said, we hit the books to figure it out, diving deep into our wins above replacement to dish out the top five winners and losers for the first wave of free agency. Uh-huh. So your top five winners in free agency, according to Pro Football Focus and their deep dive into metrics, number five, the Arizona Cardinals. Number four, the Detroit Lions. Number three, the New York Jets. Number two, the Los Angeles Chargers. And number one, your Tennessee Titans. And with all of the moves that John Robinson has made, I think this morning it is very hard to argue that there's another NFL team that has had a better first wave than John Robinson. I'm going to tip my cap to J-Rob. I think the numbers meet what we're reading and what we're seeing.
Are you basing that upon contract and player, or just basic player?
Positions of need, what they spent, the quality of player. I don't know that anybody's had a better offseason.
And obviously this goes without saying that all of this could change in a year or 2 years or three
years. That's what I want to see after the first year.
Right. Like,
how did these free agents
If Roger Saffold tears his ACL in year two and doesn't play for 2 years, well, then it would be considered a bad contract. But how do you project that?
Exactly.
You can't. So we sort of have to only base it on – again, this is the way I – like, my evaluation of Adam Humphries is – to me, what you're saying, Nick, is – I look at Adam Humphries and I go, no one's going to look at Adam Humphries and watch him play and think, man, that guy's a freak athlete that just is a difference maker, right? But I like the strategy of what John Robinson did. He saw a glaring hole and a glaring weakness in his offense at the slot where they got no production. And like Floyd said, they went out and got one of the top three, four, five slot receivers in terms of production in the entire NFL, a guy he knows from his previous stop at Tampa Bay and is young and relatively affordable. So relative to the salary cap era. And so, to me, it's about the strategy. It's about what has he done. You know, he's focused on all the things that we expected him to focus on, right? He addressed the interior offensive line. That's what we talked about all offseason. What else do we talk about? Backup quarterback. Upgraded the backup quarterback. What else do we talk about? Well, wide receiver needs a veteran in the room. Well, went out and got a veteran in the room and fixed the slot. What else do we need? Pass rush. Okay, went out and got a veteran. He's just systematically worked down the checklist. And so, to me, none of these we're not going to know if he won or lost free agency for years. We're not going to know. Like, Malcolm Butler, even within 1 year, we look at Malcolm Butler and we go, garbage signing. Okay, not a terrible signing. Jack Conklin. Look at Jack Conklin. Unbelievable draft pick. Mm-hmm. First team all pro. Best draft pick John Robinson's ever made. Now we're going, well, is he going to play guard? You know what I mean? Like, he just – it all evolves over time. And – I think as of today, all we can do is say, what do we think today about what he's accomplished so far? And I think he's addressed every single roster need and then some. And he's still got all this draft capital to play with now to continue to upgrade those positions, so especially defensive line. So, listen, John Robinson has done a systematic job since the day he got here. Mm-hmm. And it has been nothing but basically success for him. Now, there's another tier he needs to get this team to. just like Marcus. There's another tier Marcus needs to get to. But by and large, they've done everything they can to make this team a very competitive football franchise that is in the playoff race every single December. And that is not something that we had in the city for a long time.
No, you're right. And each individual guy, I think, you will know the success of this year's free agents based upon their production after a few years. Yes, on paper, that's why, you know, teams, you know, GMs say, listen, championships are not won in March and April and May. You know, championships are won, you know, throughout the season. What do you do? Yes, you put together a team, you assemble a team, but what then that said team do once the lights turn on? You could have went out. For example, that Washington Redskins team, I remember playing that team with Deion Sanders, Mark Carrier. They had Andre Reed, I believe, was on that team, Bruce Smith. So they went out and got all these Hall of Famers, but they ended up the season only winning 8 games. I remember we went there as a Titan, went there and beat them on Monday night in their place in Washington. They had all of these, you know, future Hall of Famers. So, but when these guys were signed, it was like, oh, they got the best signing, you know, free agency group. You know, this team is going to win a Super Bowl. Yes, on paper, but then once they got into gameplay, this team wasn't what people thought they were. And you look at the Titans, you look at other teams, on paper, yes, they have done the necessary things to plug holes or fill holes that they thought they had on their team. But then you want to see, as the Titans want to as well, upper management, okay, we've assembled these guys. Now we will know truly what we've done in free agency after the first and second year. Because if these are guys that are that we are building upon, then great. But these, if these are guys that we're looking to get rid of after 2 years, it's like we're back at square one. Because these guys hadn't panned out.
Coming up next as we kick off Hour 2 of Morning Drive, interesting news on the Nashville Predators front yesterday afternoon. We will give you the details and what it means moving forward. That is next here on Morning Drive, live from Bridgestone.